listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Max and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back, back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from textile to gossip.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I am your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back to another Sunday night edition to Max and Friends. How y'all doing? I'm here in Boulder, Colorado. It is so beautiful. I miss you all. Hey, how did you all love Jackie Collins' show? I need you to tweet me at Max Tucci and let me know about how much you enjoyed it. Now, I hope you all have the LA Talk Radio app by now, which I'm sure you do. You know it's free, so I want you to go get it and let me know what you think about the app and how easy it is to work. We're Channel 1 every Sunday night here on LA Talk Radio. I like to say, get the app and you can take me to bed every Sunday night with you, 8 o'clock p.m. on the West Coast and 11 p.m. on the East Coast. I am so disoriented with time right now, from the East Coast to the West Coast to Mountain Time to Central Time, but we're here. How's your week, everyone? Tweet me, at Max Tucci. Let me know. You know what I want to talk about for a minute? Is this whole Malaysian flight. Like, what are you thinking now is really going on? You know, I really don't watch the news about the flight because it's just too much to talk about. And, like, it's all basically myth until we get some facts. So I need to know what you all think. You know, let me know your conspiracy theories. What do you think happened, if anything? So I got to say hi to Meganella. How you doing? Thanks for always retweeting me. I love that. We need to retweet all the time. Do you all follow me on Instagram yet, to the Max Tucci? Well, follow me there because we'll have some fun on Instagram. But tonight we're going to have fun because we're going from a little bit of comedy to a little bit of cooking, from comedy to cooking on Max and Friends. How's that? So we've got, oh, I can't wait to have Sarah Barron here tonight. And then we have Chef Brown coming on, Chef Rome. He was from Extreme Chef, and I love his book because Eat Like a Celebrity we're going to talk about tonight. So you know that's a lot of fun. And The Harm in Asking is Sarah Barron's book. So we're going to talk about that. We got a lot of talk about tonight. I'm Max and Friends here on LA Talk Radio. Ronan, how you doing? Thanks for always being a part of the show. We got some good music for you tonight. But, you know, recently I've got to tell you, there's been like a lot going on with me, so y'all know real quick. Tomorrow night, if you're in South Florida, I need you to go on Check Please on WPBS, PB2 in South Florida. I did the show Check Please with my dear friend, Chef Michelle Bernstein. I just adore Chef Bernstein, Chef Mishi. And we had a great time. Basically, the show Check Please is three people pick their favorite restaurants, and you all go to each other's restaurants, and you come back, you sit down at the table with Chef Michelle Bernstein, and you talk about your experience. So my restaurant was Rosie's in Fort Lauderdale, actually in Wilton Manors. Love it. It's my favorite place when I'm down there because it's like a little vacation spot. You feel like you're going to the Keys or something. And so we had a great time on Check Please South Florida. So I need you all to tune in tomorrow night and let me know what you think. I don't know. Thanks for the tweet. I don't know if we can get it online. But if you Google Check Please South Florida, maybe you could watch it online. But we're going to have fun tonight. So, and tomorrow night, we're going to have fun too. And there's just so much going on. I got to tell you the truth, y'all. I am tired as a mofo. It has been nonstop. We've just been traveling and flying all over the place. And you know how it goes. It's life to the max. But sometimes we got to be still and know. Hey, I met a great guy on, Thursday night? We went to a satsang. And he's like my Boulder guru. Ash, he's amazing. Ash Ruiz is his name, Ashruiz. Google him, because we were talking about life and just the wonderfulness of life and love and just exploring love and letting everyone just love. You know, it's kind of like, I don't want to say like a hippie movement, because we're just like really getting into this flow of being cool with each other and just telling each other, you know what? I love you despite of what's wrong in your life and despite of what you think is wrong and what perceptions we have. So we're going to have Ash join us on a show coming up in the future. But until then, I want to give you all one of my favorite songs. And when this song is over, Sarah Barron's going to be with us. The show on Max and Friends. The song, As I Lay Me Down by Sophie B. Hawkins. And we'll be right back with my new friend and author, Sarah Barron.
It felt like springtime on this February morning. In the courtyard, birds were singing your praise. I'm still recalling things you said to make me feel alright. I carry them with me today now as I lay me down to sleep. Yes, I pray that you will hold me dear. Though I'm far away, I'll whisper your name into the sky, and I'll wake up happy. I wonder why I feel so high, though I am not above the sorrow, heavy-hearted till you call my name. And it sounds like church bells.
This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. That was my song by Sophie B. Hawkins, As I Lay Me Down. Where y'all being laid down these days? You know, I don't know. But is there a harm in asking where I ask you where you're laying down these days? Who's better you in, people? Well, the harm in asking is the new book that we're going to talk about tonight by my guest, Sarah Barron. Welcome to Max and Friends, Sarah.
Thank you, Max. Thank you very much for having me.
It's my pleasure. So let's talk about the absurdities of the human condition and the harm in asking. I like to get raunchy, so let's get raunchy. Before we get there, tell us about your life and why you became an author, of all things, because you're a comedian also.
Yes, well, I wish I had a very glamorous or at least admirable reason for it, but I'm not sure that's true. I really... I wanted to kind of be anything other than a writer to some extent, because as anyone who's ever sat down and tried to write anything knows, it's its own particular horrible hell. So I wanted to be an actor, but that didn't work. And I wanted to be a stand-up comedian, and that didn't work. And then eventually the writing thing just sort of went a little bit better for me than all the other things that I'd failed at. And I was like, well, I can wear sweatpants during the day, and I'm starting to make the tiniest bit of money, so I'll stick with this one. So that is my glamorous road there, frankly.
Well, it's a good road to go because it's your road, and it's what you do. But you've been, like, appeared in Vanity Fair and on Showtime, so how did you get, like, into the whole Vanity Fair aspect and Showtime?
Well, so let me, I will answer those questions honestly, because you seem like the kind of guy who wants an honest answer, Max.
Call it thing.
With Vanity Fair, I knew someone who knew someone who knew someone, and they were compiling stories about, like, you know, essentially your worst Christmas ever, you know, or sort of like silly Christmas stories. And a silly holiday themed story is right up my alley. So I had one and then submitted that, and that got selected and published, which was about, it was a story about how during the holiday season I was dating a man who was half Vietnamese and half black. I referred to him as my Afrocasian.
Okay.
Well, isn't it? It's called, I think it's called Blasian. Like, that's what people say usually is a Blasian. Okay. But I call him an Afrocasian just to try and be inventive. And anyway, so I bought him a book for Christmas, and then I wrote an inscription, and I wrote blah 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 to my favorite Afrocasian, but I have horrible handwriting, and I wrote in script, and so it read the way that he read it was to my favorite African slave, which is wonderful. So that was my sort of, that was my holiday disaster when I told my then black boyfriend that he was an African slave. So that went great for me. So I wrote about that for Vanity Fair, and that was my way in to the glamorous life that I lead.
Well, that is quite the way in. So it was like almost like an Amistad kind of a thing.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, my life is always looking like Amistad.
You sailed
exactly.
Sunk that battleship. But that's funny. So how did you recover from that?
Well, the very honest answer is that immediately, you know someone a little bit, and hopefully you know that they're not writing like, "Dear African slave, seriously." And he's like, "Does this say African slave?" And I was like, "Are you on crack? What do you mean? Does it say African slave?" And he pointed to it, and I was like, "Oh my God, Afrocasian! It says Afrocasian!" And then we had a quick laugh about it, as you do. But in that heart-stopping moment where you're going, "Did I somehow write African slave? Like, was that living inside me?" But it turned out that it wasn't.
So would that,
that darkness
of,
was not.
It wasn't there. Would that be one of your clumsy encounters with the human race?
Why, yes, Max, it would. I have many of them.
And is that why that's the subtitle of your book, The Harm in Asking?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I think, when you're trying to title these books, you know what I mean? Like, you're looking for, at least I'm looking for something that has a real sense of humor to it, but isn't too horribly obvious, so a lot of the time I think in a comedy book or an essay collection, you then sort of need what they call the reading line or the subtitle to kind of be like, "Hey everybody, here's what this is." So the subtitle, "My Clumsy Encounters with the Human Race," hopefully says to a reader that it is going to be about somebody humiliating themselves over and over again in a way that I hope is funny and relatable. I don't know if I succeeded, but that was the goal anyway.
That was the goal. Well, it's out right now. It came out March 25th. So you gave birth on March 25th to The Harm in Asking.
Pretty much. It was very rectangular, but other than that, it went okay.
Was it an easy birth?
No, it wasn't. It was very difficult. It was very painful, but now it's over. And now that it's over, then you're just like exhausted and trying to be very happy all the time, I suppose.
And how long did it take you to write The Harm in Asking?
Well, it took me about, start to finish, it was about 3 years. which is a while. But I am, if there's one thing I am not, it is a quick worker. I work slowly. I have a lot of people I need to be stalking on Facebook. You know what I mean? Like ex-boyfriends, current girlfriends of ex-boyfriends. I gotta keep myself busy with that stuff. And then I can tend to my writing when I'm not.
So are you single now?
No, I'm actually married now. Oh, I got married.
You's married now.
Yeah, you know it. Off the market at 34. What?
Good for you. That's cool.
Yep. So, yep.
Now, like, you know, being an author and being married, is it easy to write your books? And does your husband give you any input?
He does, actually. Like, he, I met him. The book, as I said, took about 3 years to write, and I met him about a year into it. So he does. Yeah, he does. I mean, I think of him as he's not a comedian by trade, but there's some comedy associated with what he does, and I think he has a very good eye for that stuff, you know. And I think if you share that stuff with your person, whoever that is, I think it's really important that they know how to not just tell you that you're good, because that's kind of the worst thing for you. So it's tense because you get all this criticism from your partner, which is never the easiest thing. But I also think that a partner who doesn't just criticize is never the best thing for the work, if you
Absolutely.
Know what I mean.
I know what you mean. So the Harmon Asking Everyone explores the absurdities of the human condition with occasionally raunchy, often mortifying, and always entertaining results. Now, what has been like your most mortifying moment in life thus far?
My most mortifying moment thus far. Jesus, where to begin? I mean, you know, there's a story in the book about how, you know, I wind up, long story short, too late, using Band-Aids instead of a bra on my breasts. I know you have female listeners out there, and I know that there's been some
it
point
works.
At which they've tried this.
Yes.
Yeah. Or
now,
so if you're not necessarily... Yeah,
did you
go ahead.
Use the big ass knee Band-Aid, or did you use like the little round Band-Aid?
neither. Like this one that's sort of in between.
Okay.
And you know, it's because if you're a small chested lady, there are certain tops where like you don't need a full on bra, but like the nipples are just not appropriate, and you're like, I need something. And that anyway, that's sort of how I wound up in the position, and then literally and figuratively. And then I went out with someone, got a you know, had a bit to drink, and then forgot about them, and then they were sort of across me later in the evening, so that they were then visible to another human being. And if you've never seen a woman with nipples on her Band-Aids, Band-Aids on her nipples. Excuse me. They don't do a lot to help a mood along. So, and I really would have liked to seal that deal. Do you know what I mean? He was very cute. So that was one of my worst human moments, I have to say.
Now, was that the male escort?
No, there's another story in my book about, you know, a girl doesn't want to give too much away here. And I will just put it out there that I have never intercourse with a male escort, because that would be illegal and also like actually does nothing for me. But I do know someone who's a male escort. So that's something about that in the book. But no, this was an acupuncturist that I'd worked with.
Oh.
And then we sort of went out after the acupuncture was over, and someone had to use her Band-Aids and ruin her one chance with the handsome acupuncturist.
Oh, no. You could have been poking
I know.
Anyways, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sad
now,
times.
Now, in your book, you say, your quote is about yourself, is, in my bones, I am uncool. What do you think you're uncool? I think you're fun.
Oh, Max, thank you. That's so supportive. No, I think, first of all, I think that we are just all in our rawest state, uncool. And I am one of those people, like that's sort of one of the, you know, a conclusion that I come to after years of trying to rebel in various ways. Like, I've pretty much never done drugs. I can't handle them at all. I hate all drugs. I can barely consume alcohol. I wanted to get a tattoo, but couldn't really make it happen. I have horrible taste in music. Like, I'm just not in possession of that particular gene. And a section of my book is about trying to then accept and embrace that reality.
So it's a reality for you, or is it a perception?
It's a reality for me. Yeah, I'm pretty, yeah. Like right now I'm pretty uncooled. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I don't think I'm at my coolest at the moment, you know, no makeup on, my glasses are on. It's 11 o'clock my time, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's like, you know, it's an unpeeling moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, aren't we just all uncool, like underneath it all? Do you know what I mean? But anyway,
you know, we have the
discussion all just need to admit
today.
It.
You know, it's funny that you say that because we had a discussion today about like how lawyers could write a $700 letter. And like if you were to put that letter on a shelf in a store, would it be worth $700 and who would buy it? And are we
exactly
really that cool or are we not?
Everyone it's is like, performing. Do you know what I mean?
That's exactly what we said. It's just a big performance of bullshit. And it's like, you know, we call ourselves like these radio hosts and authors or comedians or chefs or whatever. And at the end of the day, it's like, it's just one big circus.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's just fun. But I think that people sometimes are unappealing too. So tell us about People Are Unappealing.
Well, People Are Unappealing was my first book. It is still available for sale in case I'm impossibly managing to convince anyone to buy my books right now. and it was similar to the first, except I was a little bit younger when I wrote it. And it details everything from how I got my junior high school nickname, which was Chick with a Dick, to the fact
Back up. How did that happen?
It happened because I did a junior high school theater production, and I, this is a lot of information, but you ask it, it's nighttime, and so I'm just going to give it to you.
Right,
I had to wear like a...
We got to wait. If there's kids in the room, because I know there are, get them out the room. All right, go.
Yes, children out of the room, and they should, you know, it's approaching child bedtime anyway, but I had to wear this costume that was supposed to be basically like a leotard underneath a kimono. And I had recently gotten my period for the first time. And so there was a sanitary pad combined with a leotard and it just didn't look amazing. And my kimono fell open and I was visible to my entire junior high school class. And someone in the front row was like, that chick's got a dick, chick with a dick.
Oh my God.
And that's how it happened. And I'm like, still standing as a human being. So isn't that actually like the beautiful takeaway?
That is the takeaway, but were you scarred?
Like that can happen to you and you can grow into somebody who then talks about it on the radio when you're 34 years old.
I'm comfortable with it. But was there any scarring through your adolescent years?
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe if that hadn't happened to me, I'd be able to be cool now. Do you know what I mean?
But maybe that's what made you cool, and that's why you're, like, writing these books now and how people are unappealing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm helping other young nerds find their strengths, exactly.
Well, that's the question. What came first, the chicken or the period?
Right. I think my period came, and then the chicken came after my period. Yeah,
now, when I say
much,
Taco
probably.
Bell, what does that mean to you?
Oh, well, Taco Bell, I love Taco Bell, and the smell is very soothing to me. So if someone says Taco Bell, I think I feel calm, I feel serene, I feel like I am one with myself right now because you just mentioned Taco Bell.
Oh, so it's like sexual for you almost.
No. What you're referring to is a story in which I talk about the fact that I wanted to get a tattoo, but I was like really afraid of tattoo parlors. And so I found this tattoo parlor that was next door to a Taco Bell because I thought, oh, it'll like smell, you know how Taco Bell smells so strong. I was like, I bet the tattoo parlor will smell like Taco Bell and that will like soothe me. And a thing that I reference is a way of explaining to my readers how much I love Taco Bell is that there was one time that I was having sex and this guy was like, what do you want? And I was so hungry and he lived next door to a Taco Bell. And what I thought was like, I just want you to like get off me and to go get me Taco Bell. Like that was what felt most appealing in that moment. So it is not that Taco Bell is sexual to me, but one time I was having sex and I thought, I would so much prefer Taco Bell to this exchange right now.
And that's where the title comes into place, because when someone asks you that question, it's like the harm in asking. Because if you want to know the truth, I want Taco Bell.
Yeah, like, you know, this is the reason that I came up with the title is that that's the thing, right? Like, oh, you know, what's the harm in asking? And that actually we're constantly offending people with, like, everything we ask. And every, you know what I mean? It's like there is so much harm in asking so many questions that we try and trick ourselves into thinking are acceptable when in fact they're not.
Well, I want to let's talk about the chapter of your teaching and your students coming up with the phrase, this might be controversial. Now, do you say controversial or controversial?
I say controversial. What do you say?
I say whatever I feel like at the moment. So we'll go. If you say controversial, then I'm going to say controversial.
Great. Perfect.
So how did that hold? Like, let's talk about that chapter because it's like riveting.
So that chapter, I my bread and butter for many years was that I taught like adult writing classes. And this game basically sort of came out of one of the classes, which is that, like, if you've ever taken a writing class or probably a bunch of other like adult classes, you'll do these personal critiques and you have to come up with something that you think is good about a piece and bad about a piece. And I had this one student who hated criticizing other people's work. And so he would always sort of say, like, oh, this might be controversial, but I didn't love that one scene on page 5 where you did this, right? Like, so basically for him, it functioned as a disclaimer. And we got into this habit, like, he would say it so often that everyone would say it. Like, this might be controversial was this precursor always to, like, the negative comment that you would make about a classmate's work. And one time I had this other student be like, all right, I'm done. I can't hear anyone say the phrase, this might be controversial anymore. It's killing me. So from now on, if you say this might be controversial, you then have to say something genuinely controversial. So it was this way of kind of, and that was sort of what we started doing, and it would be like you'd have to think of something that was like this really dark, offensive thought that you had to vocalize out loud, because we all have those, and it's like you never say it.
So
do you want to start?
You start.
Okay. Let me just think of a good one.
Okay.
This, you could say, this might be controversial, but I do judge women who change their names when they get married. This might be controversial. So what I mean when I say that, like, I'm married, I decided not to change my name. And the thing that I always say in public or that I say to my friends is, like, you know, it's not what a woman wants to do. It's not, but actually I feel like it's a very anti-feminist choice to make. This might be controversial.
Okay, so this might be controversial since we're on the woman thing. Like, do we really talk about abortion at dinner?
So do we really mean, like, this might be controversial, but you hate when people talk about it? Like
right.
or you know, so you'd have to get your attitude about abortion.
Okay.
You'd have to work it in. So, for example, like, maybe you're a liberal guy. Everyone you know is, like, super liberal. But part of you actually thinks abortions are really bad, and you would judge a woman if she had one, even though, like, you know intellectually that's the worst thing you could possibly think. But you could be like, this might be controversial, but if I found out a woman had an abortion, I would think that she was irresponsible. You see what I'm saying? It's like you have to think what the dark thing is and say it.
Right. So then I'd be like, so this might be controversial, but I think that women who get pregnant are sluts.
You women who get pregnant outside of marriage, maybe. I mean, because you don't really think every woman who gets... You think it's slutty if you get pregnant inside of marriage. Okay. Good. Pretty good. Solid.
Well, let's just go to that, like, weird side of life. No, but it's actually that could be like – you should start a board game. Like, that's like a good – like a new board game.
Yes, I'm trying. I always say I'm trying to make this might be controversial happen the way that, like, they try and make fetch happen in Mean Girls. I don't know if it's – I don't think I've been particularly successful, but maybe one day.
All right. For the record, everyone, I'm getting, like, a note right here. I don't think that we're playing a game, so you all know.
Yes. And this is the point. It's sort of – it's not the stuff that consciously you think. It's the stuff that, you know, not anything
perfect
that you
example.
Said, but, you know.
You know, here's the thing. Like, a friend of mine is on the show Blood, Sweat, and Heels, right? On Bravo. And
okay.
And there's this one girl, she's so funny, Demetria. And this one girl's like, oh, Jesus is my husband. And she's like, that's all great and stuff, but you can't, like, fuck Jesus. Everybody went, like, ballistic on her. So would that, like, kind of fit into this is so controversial, like, Jesus is hot but you can't fuck him?
Here's the thing. First of all, it's an awesome joke, and I hate everyone who went ballistic on her because people need to learn to get a sense of humor. But anyway, it's more sort of like an opinion. It has to be an opinion that you have. So this might be controversial version of that would be like, this might be controversial. This might be controversial, but, you know, everyone who thinks that Jesus is real is actually stupid, and I don't respect their opinions. See what I'm saying?
Okay. And then the whole room would just, like, go crazy on you if you were, like, in the South.
Yeah, or even, you know, because the thing is, I think even if you were somewhere that wasn't that Southern, like, we're so trained to kind of be like, well, but let's agree to disagree. You know, and if you're kind of going like, no, I don't agree to disagree with you. I just believe in my soul that you're stupid. See what I'm saying? Like, that's what people call bananas.
You, like, own your authenticity.
Yeah, exactly. You know, where you say out loud the darkest thing.
All right, your darkest thing. The darkest thing right now is that this is all just a joke. We're all having fun.
Yeah.
So don't blow up my Twitter because I'm talking to Sarah Baron here on Max and Friends, the book, The Harm in Asking. Tweet me right now, # The Harm in Asking. Was asking Sarah those questions harmful? That's what I want to know.
Let's hope.
Let's offend everyone. You know, fuck them all and marry none. But no, all joking aside. So, you know, The Harm in Asking is out now, everyone. Go to Amazon.com, get the book, tweet Sarah because you can have a lot of fun with her on Twitter. And
indeed.
Do you tweet a lot?
I want to tweet a lot. Like, I sort of do and don't want to tweet a lot. But, you know, I think I tweet a few times a day. How about you?
I'm like addicted to Twitter. It's like bad. Well, you know, because I got to like promote the show. And then if there's like food that I love, because I love food, I'm like food porn. And I've like got to take pictures of all the food. And then if there's like a kooky moment, I want to capture it. And I do like, it's Twitter. And I love Twitter. You know what I really love Twitter for? To like, if there's a business that like I don't agree with and I need to like go public with it, for instance, like Mercedes, like I had a problem with them and I brought my car there and like they weren't helpful. So I blasted them on Twitter. And then like someone from North American, Eastern, whatever office called me and they're like, what happened? They were like, we're so sorry. I'm like, oh, so Twitter works. So that's when I like to tweet, like revenge Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. That's what my husband is really into. Like, he really tried, which I think is sort of using it for good in a way. Like, if it makes someone accountable, then that's wonderful, I think.
Right. Listen, I couldn't agree more. But, like, tell me real quick about you. Who are some of the comics and writers you most admire?
I'm going to say some very unoriginal answers to this question, and I apologize for that, but I think it's because I have unoriginal taste. Writer-wise, I am a massive fan of David Sedaris. I think he is
just bought
quite
his book
a genius.
In the thrift shop today. Love him.
Well, yeah, he's amazing. I mean, I think he's the king. Bill Bryson is someone that I think is magnificent. Nora Ephron is wonderful. I think Sloan Crosley is brilliant. And stand-up wise, you know, I never see as much as I want to, but like everyone else on the planet, I'm currently obsessed by Louis C.K.
Okay. That's fun. Yeah, he's groovy. I love my Lisa Lampanelli too. I don't know how much I love her.
Oh, she's, well, dude, let me tell you something. I think she's so funny. And I one time heard David Sedaris, interviewed. And so they were like, what do you find funny? And he's like, you know what's funny? Does anyone know about the comedian Lisa Lampanelli? Like, I just found some of her stuff online and she's hilarious. So
she
bringing
is.
Them both together.
Well, speaking online, you know, I did interview Lisa Lampanelli, everyone. So go to latalkradio.com/max.php and you can find the Lisa Lampanelli interview there. I love her. And she was like, I'm from New York, and sometimes I can sound black. So she was like, we were talking and she knows I'm white, but she went there. She's like, you sound so black. I'm like, really?
Thank you.
I was like, well, at least someone can identify with me. But no, it's fun. I love Lisa Lampanelli and I love to joke around and have fun. So it's all, you know, the harm in asking. I love that. That's like going to be my quote for the week. Now, what do you got like a lot going, like LA, you've got something coming up, I hear. on the 16th.
Yes,
of
so I'm coming to Los Angeles, and I'm doing a performance of sorts at Book Soup on the 16th at 7 o'clock. And my personal feeling about book readings, frankly speaking, is that they usually suck because books are meant to be read, and so reading them out loud tends to be far less entertaining than a million other things that you can do with your evening. However, I consider it my personal responsibility if I am lucky enough to have an audience and I'm doing a reading to do everything I can to make it entertaining. So that is my goal with my reading at Book Soup.
Now, here's – and that Book Soup, everyone, in L.A., 416. Couldn't you do it like 420? I mean, it's like Easter and 420.
Yeah, I know. But remember, I'm not that cool. Like, I don't smoke pot. I'm not like 420, right. Dude. Like, no, absolutely not. That would be too cool for me. I've got to go with the 16th. You know, maybe have 1.5 glasses of red wine when I'm done, but that's as crazy as I can get. You see what I'm saying?
With ice? Are you watering it down, putting ice in it?
No. I'm not tacky. I'm just not cool. I'm not pleased putting ice in my red wine. Who do you think you're dealing with? I would never.
I love it. I'm not tacky. I'm just uncool. I'm now, if your book were to be read like on audio, who would read your book?
Well, I hope that I would do it. Yeah. I've got a passionate voice.
You do. And it's like when you talk about Taco Bell, I don't know if like I want to like put, you know, the cream in the enchilada or like have one.
Yeah, it's like you're so confused because my description of Taco Bell was so wonderful. You don't even know what you want anymore.
Right. Ring the bell. Ring the bell.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, I've got a great chef coming on tonight who's like an amazing celebrity chef, and he's got a great book called Eat Like Celebrities. So we're going to talk about some celebrity food. And dare I go –
interesting.
Is there harm in asking him about Taco Bell, Sarah Barron?
Exactly. Or you could, like, I don't even know what the book is, but is it, you know, is it like diet food? Because isn't that what eating like a celebrity is? I'm curious.
Well, we're going to find out. You're like, be my co-host, because that was like the perfect segue.
Yeah. Happy to do that job for you, my friend.
So you have like a radio voice because you want to read your own book, and like we have Taco Bell in common, and and the heart
of it. So well, it's natural chemistry, exactly.
It's fun. So what's next for you? Any other books?
I think so, but I think, you know, at the moment I'm going to try and focus more on the comedy stuff for a little bit, try and knock out, you know, the screenplay that's been up in my incompetent brain for the last year and get those two things off the to-do list, and then maybe head back to the book thing. But, you know, it is exhausting like nothing, and it doesn't pay all that brilliantly, so I'm going to try some other things on for size, then get back to the book writing.
And get back to the book writing. And on that note, can you leave my listeners tonight with like one of your favorite quotes?
One of my favorite quotes. Can it be one of my dad's quotes? Is that okay?
Whatever you love, it's yours.
Well, my father raised me to believe two things. The first is that no one else wants to really hear about your vacation. Like, people ask you because they're being nice to you, but like if you just went, you know, to Thailand, unless I'm about to go to Thailand and you were like, let me just tell you about Thailand, like nobody cares, and they're lying to you if they do. The second quote is that chronic lateness is indicative of self-absorption. That like lateness, people who are chronically late, it's a small thing that reveals volumes. So these are two things I believe about life that I'd like to share with your listeners.
I'm so glad you did. You know, especially like doing live radio, like I have like this, like being a stickler on being on time because like I have to be in the studio on time to get ready. So I get the
whole
thing.
Of course.
I get it.
Every late person is always like, I'm so sorry. And it's like, they're always late, and it's rude. And I always want to say, this is about your willingness to be rude to people. And that's okay. But let's not dress it up as anything other than that. So these are some things I believe, Max. These are some things I believe.
And I believe them with you. The harm in asking, everyone. You're listening to Max and Friends. Sarah is my guest tonight, and we're going to play a song now. Sarah, thanks so much for being on the show tonight. The book, The Harm in Asking, everyone, go get it. What do you want? I'm going to bid you a wonderful night. Go get some Taco Bell, my friend.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Max. I appreciate it.
All right, Sarah. Thanks so much.
Bye.
And on that note, everyone, we're going to go right to the song, It's Only Love, on Max and Friends.
Thank you.
Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. That was It's Only Love. We've got a great guest coming on. So, Ronan, it's one of my hot topics. Let's hit it.
Hey, y'all, guys and girls. Pick a topic, and you know we're going to drop it on
Pick a topic, because you know we're going to drop it on Max and Friends. And the topic is Eat Like a Celebrity. Or that's the book. And my little phrase is, or just look like one. We've got Chef Rome joining us. Everyone, you've got to go right now to cookwithrome.com. The book you have to get, Eat Like a Celebrity, because not only is it delicious, but the recipes. Oh, we talk about oxtail and rock shrimp and a rock shrimp pot pie. Are you all ready for Chef Rome? Welcome to Max and Friends.
What's happening, Max? How you doing, man?
I'm great. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm just sitting up here stirring these pots today and having some nice turkey wings and rice and broccoli and, yeah, sweet potato pie and all that good stuff. So
that is the good stuff. Now, not only are you like a celebrity chef, but you're like celebrity. You're the chef to the celebrities. So
you've got like
a dual title going on right now. So are these what you're making right now in the kitchen? Who would you feed that to?
Myself. this is a Chef Rome. This is what I'm in the mood for. Meal.
Because, you know, the book, Eat Like a Celebrity, and you have been able to cook for some big names. Can you share your list with us?
Absolutely. I was Shaquille O'Neal's personal chef, Mike Bibby, Brevin Knight, Raymond Felton, Chris Wilcox, a lot of NBA players, Damon Jones, but I've also, you know, cooked for Colin Powell, the King of Sweden, Priscilla Presley. It's a really long list.
Now, in the book, Eat Like a Celebrity, what did you cook for Shaq? Do you have a recipe?
You know what? He was the one client that I didn't put a recipe in the book for. And really that was because of security reasons. But Shaquille, what I can say is that he's one of those guys who is very particular about what he eats. He's very consistent about what he likes to eat before a game when he was playing. And he's not the big eater that people think that he is. You know, right. Given his big, massive frame of 7'1", 325 pounds, believe me, he ate less than everybody in the house, it seems.
Isn't that incredible? Now, you know, Talk the Thunder? Daryl Dawkins, remember Daryl
Dawkins? Yeah.
You know, Daryl Dawkins and I had a cooking show that we started, and it was funny because Daryl Dawkins is just as equally as tall as Shaq and, you know, the Godfather breaking the backboard. So we had these guys are massive, and he was like the same, but they are a lot of fun, these big NBA players. And once you get in the kitchen with them, as you know, it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because the New York Knicks just did – a couple of months ago, they did a series with Amari Stoudemire and his chef, Chef Max Hardy, and then myself. And it was like this friendly competition going back and forth, with the players who actually had an opportunity to come into the kitchen and cook with us. And I can tell you, Raymond Felton cannot cook. He can't. He can't cook. Now, Chris Wilcox, he can really burn in the kitchen. Brevin Knight has his one or two things that he can do. But I'd have to say that, yeah, Chris Wilcox was probably the best NBA player in the kitchen cooking-wise that I know of.
You see, and you're the man in the kitchen, though, because, you know, the new book, everyone, you've got to get it, Eat Like a Celebrity. Through the book, Chef Rome shares with mm-hmm. you the treasures of his visions, creations, and passions. It's soul food, because from what I read about you, it's like you've got your connection, your deep faith connection with God, and I think you take that into the kitchen. Would that be accurate?
That's very accurate, man. I think that when you have the ability to touch the lives of so many people through food, there's a level of responsibility for that. And you know, when we hold ourselves accountable, we do it at a level where we know that we can make or break somebody's day. We can extend somebody's career. We can even help save lives through our cooking. And really, when you put it in that perspective and you think about it in that regard, you know that, you know, you have to call on a higher power to get us through that sometime. And that's my approach to every time I go in the kitchen. Yeah.
Amazing. So the book, Eat Like a Celebrity, Southern Cuisine with a Gourmet Twist. Let's talk about rock shrimp pot pie. Can we for a minute?
Yeah. One of my favorites. One of those comfort foods, you know?
It is. But now how did you get, you know, the mixology of the rock shrimp and pot pie? Because that's like an amazing blend of flavors there.
Well, you know, first of all, I am a pot pie fan, and I love anytime I go somewhere and I see different pot pies and they have different items in them. You know, I had never seen shrimp in a pot pie. Yeah, so I wanted to do something different, and I wanted something that still be relatively light in the pot pie family, and that was what my approach was. And I came up with it, of course, in the wintertime, and I wanted to make sure that it still was that same comfort that we enjoy, you know, that homemade crust, that buttery topping, but the inside, you know, you still got the shrimp, you still got the vegetables, and you had this wonderful seafood broth. You know, that was delicious, man.
Chef Rome, when are you coming down to Miami so we can get you on one of my live TV cooking segments? Because I'm getting hungry off this shrimp pot pie.
Well, you name. Listen. I'm always looking for a reason and an excuse to get to Miami. So you tell me when you want me there, and we will make that happen. How about that?
That's a plan. Not only a plan, it's going into action now, because I'm texting people as we speak. But now, where can people find you on Twitter?
Well, Twitter is at Chef J Rome, at Chef J Brown, Chefjay Brown. Yeah.
So do you give people advice on Twitter for what's for dinner with the questions? Because I know people are going to start tweeting me, ask him what's for dinner.
Yeah, well, you know, I do. And I connect it with my Facebook and all of that. But once in a while, I will put recipes up there, or I'll make some menu suggestions. Or maybe I've just prepared a meal for one of my clients, and I'll put the picture of the finished product up there. And that way, they see what it's supposed to be like, and it tempts them to go ahead and try it. And I get a lot of feedback from that.
Yeah. Well, I'm tweeting right now. Tune in to Max and Friends, because I've got Chef Rome joining me right now. The book, Eat Like a Celebrity. So what inspired you to get this book going? Your journey has been a good journey.
Yeah, it's been a long journey, and it's been a flavorful journey. But I think the thing that inspired me was the fact that I had so many stories that I wanted to tell. So many different avenues to pull from. You know, the book literally took me 14 years to complete.
Wow.
Literally. So it's an autobiography as well as a cookbook. It's over 113 recipes in there, but it's a lot of biography because it was my way of introducing myself to the world and the world to who I am. And I wanted people to know about my journey that, you know, oftentimes we have younger chefs who see, you know, those of us that they call celebrity chefs, and they don't really realize that that was a journey. That was a process. It didn't just happen. No one just say, hey, I want to put you on TV. No, there was a process to that. And I just wanted to give back some of my journey so that the younger chefs wouldn't make some of the same mistakes that I've made. I wanted them to glean from the experiences of working with different athletes. I wanted them to know that it's more to being a chef than just being in the restaurant kitchen. There's so many different avenues that we can go to. So
absolutely. We're talking about. And it's a good book. Eat Like a Celebrity, Chef Rome, personal chef to the stars, who's also a star himself. And what I love about the book are the pictures. They are so vivid, so intense, and they're close up. There's that on the back of the book. There's that chicken. Look, you just want to get into that chicken.
On the back? No, that's actually that's lobster.
The bottom left corner.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Cornish hen, man.
Oh, that's a cornish hen.
Absolutely.
The lobster tails on the top, and then you've got the Cornish hen.
Right.
Just, I want to get into it. It looks so good. And that's just the picture. But now, before we got to wrap this up, because time just slips by, especially when you're talking about food and good stuff. But eat like a celebrity. I'm going to eat like a celebrity tomorrow because I'm going to cook. I'm going to try that rock shrimp pot pie. But and I'll let you know.
Let me know what you think.
For real. Now, real quick. If I were to give you a big old Delmonico steak right now, what would you do with it?
Oh, my God. I would. First of all, fresh herbs would be the first thing that I would run to. And when I would rub that Dijon mustard on each side, hit it with those fresh herbs and some other seasonings, and I would grill that. That Delmonico steak and this tenderness and that sweet, juicy, oh, my God. Yeah. That's it.
You know why I ask you, right?
Why?
You know,
why?
My grandfather,
did you really make that?
No, my grandfather owned Delmonico's restaurant in New York.
Well, you know what? I should go tomorrow. I should go this weekend while I'm there.
And I'm going back to 1927 when he first took it over. But it's not in our family anymore, but we had it for a long time. And my grandfather, you know, invented the a lot of stuff was invented at Delmonico's, but he had a lot of stuff going on, you know, Eggs Benedict, he didn't invent Eggs Benedict, but we had Eggs Benedict originated there, Lobster Newburg originated there, Chicken a la King originated there, and then my grandfather invented the wedge salad. And this
really?
Is a funny story. Yeah, I'm going to give you an insider tip, and then Ronan, I promise I'm going to wrap up. But, you know, when my grandfather came out with that salad, Cereal from Le Cirque used to work at Delmonico's, and He made fun of the salad. He said, how can you serve the cheapest lettuce to the customers? And obviously now today, the wedge salad is one of his famous salads. But we could talk about food forever. I want to have you back on the show so we could really talk about some food and get into some of your recipes. And before I let you go, what would be served at your last dinner?
Wow. Prime rib.
Oh,
I'm a steak guy. Prime rib, man.
We can leave it at that because that's the way to end the show, on a big, nice, juicy prime rib.
Absolutely. Bone in.
Yes, that's the way. Well, Chef Rome, personal chef of stars, Eat Like a Celebrity is the book. Southern Cuisine with a Gourmet Twist. Go get it now, Amazon.com. And, of course, y'all go to cookwithrome.com. Check out the website and learn more about this wonderful chef, talented chef, soul food chef, because he's really feeding the soul. So, Chef Rome, thank you so much for being a guest on Max and Friends tonight.
Thank you, Chef Max. I appreciate it, man.
And I'm going to have you back. We're going to come
absolutely.
Back. You know when I'll have you back? Let's have you back for Father's Day. So you can, the week before Father's Day, we'll have you back so you can give our listeners something to cook for their dads.
I like that. Would like that.
All right. Mark that on your calendars, everyone. Chef Rome, personal chef to the stars, Eat Like a Celebrity, Southern Cuisine with a Gourmet Twist. Thanks for joining us on Max and Friends.
All right.
Good night. All right, everybody, we got to wrap this show up. Sarah Barron, thank you so much for joining us. Chef Rome, you're coming back on the show, and we're going to talk more food. Until then, everyone, love somebody, even if it's yourself. Take life to the max. Good night and good karma. You're listening to Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci, on LA Talk Radio. Good night and good karma. Peace out. Thank you, Ronan. That was a fun show.